The Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell just got bigger. Featuring former defensive star and three-time national champion at Nebraska and NFL player Jason Peter. Jason Peter under the helmet. With Jason Peter on the Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Elissa Walker-Campbell, we want to welcome you back this weekend to the Big E Sports Show. And again, we want to direct you to our radio website. That's eradiosports.com. Indeed, it is time for our Under the Helmet segment. We're going to be talking some college football with Jason Peter, who is perhaps exhaling after the guy that he voted for won the Heisman. Cam Newton, that is, ran away with the Heisman Trophy. What were your thoughts after watching the presentation of the big award?
I wasn't surprised with the results. I think most people probably had him as the favorite. But I think the shocking thing was how many people left Cam Newton off their ballot completely. I think it was well over 100 people that decided they weren't going to vote for him at all. And he won it, though, I think, with the amount of first-place votes he got. I think it was third, maybe largest Heisman in terms of the amount of first-place votes. So, you know, I think mostly the night was about the big pink elephant, though, in the middle of the room, and that was Cam Newton's father, who was noticeably absent, and I don't disagree with him there. I mean, for a guy who wasn't there, it certainly had, I think, a big impact on the night, let alone if he was there, it would have probably just completely overshadowed his son and his accomplishments on the field. But, yeah, it was odd, certainly when Cam got up there and was thanking everybody and giving his speech and talking about his love for his father. And, you know, you can understand, and your heart goes out to Cam Newton a little bit because, you know, he is his father. And I know, you know, in my household and households all across the world that no matter what your father does, he's always your dad and you're always going to love him. And I'm sure that's the way that Cam feels about his.
Jason Peter with us with our Under the Helmet segment, talking about Cam Newton running away with the Heisman, certainly shrouded with a lot of controversy. But one thing I'll say, you know, from watching him over the past couple of weeks with everything, all the controversy and the scandal that, you know, kind of unfolded, just how mature that he really has handled himself and just how he answers questions. And it's really stunning.
Yeah, and you know what really makes you forget, at least for a split second, about all the controversy, is that smile of his. I mean, he's got this persona about
yes.
him, this aura that just kind of radiates from him. The second he flashes those pearly whites, it's like, man, this kid is just, he's a kid. You could tell why Auburn's undefeated. Kids gravitate towards him, and he's got a presence about him. I mean, let alone he's 6'6", 250, 60 pounds, whatever he is, the kid just, he doesn't seem like a bad kid when he's up there and he's speaking, and like I said, he smiles. It's like, how could this kid be that corrupt? How could this kid be out there, you know, trying to do the whole pay-for-play type deal? And for a second there, you kind of forget about it. But, you know, in the world that we live in, and you can't open up a newspaper or turn on your computer without reading some sort of story on controversy, he is certainly the poster boy for that this year.
You know, it's interesting, Jason, we were talking about in our previous segment with Joey Lucci from Phil Steele Magazine, just about that close relationship that he has with his dad. And I just said, you know, as Cam Newton continues to grow up, he's going to kind of have to keep him at arm's length in many ways and kind of insulate himself so that, you know, he is looking out for his best interest. I mean, he's got some things that within his image that he's going to have to clean up, right?
Yeah, and wait till he goes to the next level and somebody's paying him millions of dollars. It's tough enough to succeed when you have a good head on your shoulders, let alone when you have a father who's trying to wheel and deal behind your back. There's going to be everybody and anyone who's going to want a piece of Cam Newton once he's receiving those big game checks. And, you know, for a father who has already created a ton of controversy for the kid, I mean, what's going to happen when he's got a huge bank account? I mean, is it going to be one of these deals where, son, there's a great investment I want you to do. Son, there's, you know, this or that that I think you need to go make an appearance here, and let's sign this deal. Let's do this endorsement deal. I mean, the shadiness, if it's happening already, it will continue to happen. I mean, a lot of people that I've talked to about this, they kind of bring up another Texas family, and I'm not saying that I believe in that or not, but it's just because it's out in the media. But Jessica Simpson, who had a father who also was a preacher, I believe, and
right.
A lot of people see the way that he's dealt with his daughter and really kind of exposing her and her sexuality. And you know, you just have to wonder sometimes what direction and what motives some people have.
Jason, you were a first-round draft pick. You played for the Carolina Panthers for, 5 years? I mean, what advice would you give Cam Newton if you did have that opportunity to be in a room with him? I mean, here's a young man. He's going to have millions of dollars. And as you said, it's going to be so important that he does surround himself with the right people.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, you just have to keep a close, tight-knit group of people that you can trust. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of his buddies from back home where he grew up that, you know, maybe they went and took their Series 7 test, and now they've got a license to trade on Wall Street, and they're going to tell them that he could turn, you know, the $30 million that he gets into $130 million overnight. And, you know, the temptation's going to be there, and there's going to be guys that make deals sound like guarantees and that they're can't-miss type opportunities. But, you know, you got to try to protect yourself from that. And obviously, I'm sure agents are already calling and wanting him to skip his senior year and are telling him that he needs to come out. And you know, it's tough because I remember back when I was in that situation. I mean, these guys, no matter how, you know, many times you call the phone company and say, I want my number unlisted, and I don't want to be listed anywhere on the computer. These guys, they find out your number. They find out where you live. They find out your parents' number, your brother's number, everybody, and they get hold of you, and it's overwhelming. And for a college kid, you can understand why some of these kids, it's a downward spiral after the day that they get selected in the draft. I mean, I feel like I came from a solid family where I never struggled or never had, you know, anything that I didn't need. Not that my parents spoiled me, but if I needed new shoes because, you know, the one pair had a hole in it, I got new shoes. And even in my situation, there was something about it where I felt like I was mature enough, I was grown up enough to make these difficult decisions. And the truth is, you know, you're 19, 20, 21 years old, and you don't know anything about the world. And the best thing you could do is have people around you that you trust that do have the knowledge and do have, you know, the sense to make a proper decision.
Who did you lean on during that process when you knew you were going to be going, you know, high in the draft? I mean, was it Coach McBride or was it Tom Osborne? Did he sit you down and say, you know, son, this is what you need to be expecting and look forward to?
Yeah, they all, I leant on them all quite a bit. But for myself, I guess my family, they had already gone through it to a certain degree with my older brother and with the agents and everybody calling and you know, so we were somewhat prepared for it, and I just directed everything back to my parents. If an agent got hold of my number, I just said, here, if you can call this number, and click, I hung up. I didn't want anything to do with it. My only focus was playing football and getting ready to play for a national championship. And the guys that entertain these agents and the guys that carry on relationships, especially while the season's going on, those guys are probably the ones that are destined for some type of downward spiral. But, yeah, like I said, I know I keep repeating myself, but it's just a matter of surrounding yourself with good, smart people.
You're listening to the voice of Jason Peter with our Under the Helmet segment. That's right. We're talking college football. Let's shift gears a little bit here. Talk about some of the things that have been happening within the Big 12 conference movement already taking place. What about at Oklahoma State? Mike Gundy doing a fantastic job with his team. A lot of success this year. And then losing their offensive coordinator in Dana Holgorsen. He's going to go to West Virginia. And it's not even for the head coach position, at least not yet.
Yeah, it was a little shocking that he decided to head east. The Big East certainly not known, at least this year, for great football. But I wonder if there's a little bit of, you know, the feeling that maybe he came into a successful offensive situation already. And maybe he feels like he wants to go somewhere else and show that he can do it. I mean, he was offered the job at Pitt. Now, Steve Peterson, who's the athletic director there, used to be the athletic director here.
Yes.
Doesn't have a great reputation. I mean, fired Frank Solich after a 10-win season back in 2003, a staff at Bo Pelini was the defense coordinator. Then goes back out, you know, after he hires Callahan, Tom Osborne comes in, fires, everybody's fired, and he heads back out east. And he takes Dave Wannstedt, who last year won 10 games, I believe, or 11 games. And it was the first time that they had won that many games in 30 years.
Yeah.
And he follows it up with the season that was marked by injury for Pitt. But I don't know. You know, I mean, today's the day and age where what have you done for me lately? But, you know, the Big East certainly isn't the SEC or the Big 12 or the Pac-10 or the Big 10. You know, so I don't know where somebody gets off firing a guy like Dave Wannstedt, but, you know, anyway, Holgorsen turns down that opportunity. Maybe it's because of who's calling the shots out there and Steve Peterson, or maybe it's not. Maybe he just didn't want to go to Pitt. Maybe his dream job is West Virginia. I don't know. It was a little shocking, though, but maybe he feels like he can jump to another school better from West Virginia than he thought of at Pitt. Who knows? I don't know the reason why some of these guys make the decisions that they do.
Well, to follow up on your point, Dave Wannstedt, in fact, in 2009, he had a 10-3 record, and he was coming in this season in his sixth year at Pittsburgh. So, yeah, I thought that was a little bit of a stunning move. Well, let's move ahead and talk some more about some of these bowl games that will be coming up. What is on your mind? Which game in particular are you looking most forward to?
Oh, I really can't wait to see the rematch of Nebraska playing Washington again. How that matchup came to be, oh, God only knows. I think a little bit has to do with USC going on probation and not being eligible for postseason play. Otherwise, they probably would have fit in that slot, and that would have been an enticing matchup to see Nebraska playing a program like USC, who's had the amount of success that they've had in the past decade. But they get Washington 6-6. They win their final three games of the year, and people are claiming that it's a different team today than it was earlier in the year when Nebraska put about 56 points up on them. But Nebraska fans aren't ecstatic about it. I don't know if you're going to get the usual 40 or 35,000 fans that travel to bowl games. They'll certainly be represented out there in San Diego, because I can tell you right now, in Lincoln, Nebraska, it's about 15 degrees, so people are looking for any reason to get out of town. And San Diego, everybody knows San Diego, 75, 365 days a year. So, you know, whatever. I mean, it's the BCS, and I'm sure people down in your area have seen what happened to TCU this year, running the table and feeling like they had an opportunity to play for a national championship. But and the thing is, the BCS claims that their main objective is to get number one versus number two. Well, what about number three when he's undefeated and has just as good as offense and just as good a defense as number one and two? But the reality is they don't really care about any other bowls other than national championship game. And this is a perfect example of it. I mean, you have a team in Nebraska that was just a few plays away from playing in the Fiesta Bowl in a BCS game, and now they're playing a 6-6 Washington team. And to make things worse, they got to play Washington again the beginning of the year next season. So they'll have played Washington three times in a 12-month span.
That is remarkable. I've got my producer, Michael. He's waving me off. We've got to cut it short. We've had three guests on our program today. So, Jason, we will look forward to catching up with you next week. And let's definitely talk about TCU and Wisconsin and the Rose Bowl, as you were just talking about them going 12-0, another undefeated season. It was a remarkable year for them.
Definitely was. Look forward to catching up with you next week, Alyssa.
You bet. We're going to step aside. Much more straight ahead here in just a moment.